Hello, everyone. It's Nico here in Siakulima Podcast. We talk. I'm so excited to be here today because I've got a special guest and we're going to be talking about Mental Health Foundation. A quick reminder, this week is a Mental Health Awareness Week. Mental Health Foundation is a home of Mental Health Awareness Week. This year's theme is anxiety. Anxiety is a normal emotion to all of us, but sometimes it can get out of control and become a mental health problem. That is why today we've got a special guest here today to talk to us about mental health. Please introduce yourself and tell us where you are and what you do on the Mental Health Foundation.
Yes, lovely to see you, Nico. I am David Kripe-Key, and I'm Head of Applied Learning here at the Mental Health Foundation. And it's great to be with you.
As I said earlier on, I was so excited. I'm still excited. I've been waiting for this day for a couple of weeks now. And that's where we are now. We are here and on the podcast, we're going to be talking about, on this episode. I think everyone who's listening to this episode, the first thing they want to know is that I'm going to ask you right now, can you tell me more about the Mental Health Foundation?
Yeah, the Mental Health Foundation is a UK-based charity. We've been around over 70 years and really, our priority is to improve the country's mental health, to get everybody's mental health as good as it could be, to prevent people's mental health becoming poor, and to really particularly support those whose mental health is at greatest risk. We are the organization that runs Mental Health Awareness Week, which is middle of May this year. And we work across the UK and we have a lot of international partners as well.
Yeah, David, thank you again. Now, the Mental Health Foundation, it takes a public mental health approach, focusing on prevention. What does this mean, especially to the people who don't know, who don't understand, maybe who don't know about Mental Health Foundation? Can you just take us through what does this mean?
I guess what's important about where we sit as the Mental Health Foundation is that we want to work with people before they go into that area which we think of as mental illness or mental disorder or mental ill health. So we're talking about keeping people as mentally healthy as it's possible to be and acting quickly if people's mental health starts to deteriorate. That means that we want to look after everybody's mental health, but we also recognize that some people's mental health is particularly vulnerable, and that might be as a result of trauma, of their life history, or how they find themselves now, or something in particular that's going on either directly with them or in the wider world. And so we're always looking at what may be having an impact on people's mental health. And that can be everything from the cost of living crisis, that can be the state of the world, that can be, we did a lot of work during the coronavirus pandemic that had an enormous impact on people's mental health, as well as obviously their physical health. So we want to keep people as mentally healthy as it's possible.
The next question is the question that I have been asked myself a lot. But this one's for you, David. What drew you to work in mental health?
I started life, I trained as an economist and statistician. So my natural instinct is to try and count and measure things. But while I was going through school and then to university, I also spent quite a lot of time as a psychiatric patient. So my mental health deteriorated. I became very mentally unwell. And I realized just how important my mental health was. And that actually, I couldn't do anything if I wasn't looking after my mental health and if my mental health wasn't as good as it could be. And I guess what keep I've been working in mental health now for over 30 years, and it is both the most challenging and most rewarding thing I've ever done. And I work with people from all over the world, but I really what I want to do is you know share my experience and share all the skills that I've learned and other people have shared with me, so that we can all have our mental health as good as it can possibly be, whether we've experienced poor mental health, mental illness, or just we want to live the best life we can.
Amazing work, David, what you do there, and a great explanation again. I'm going to move on to in the Mental Health Foundation's current strategy, refugees and asylum seekers, children, young people and families, and people with long-term conditions identified as groups that are at high risk of experiencing mental health problems. Why do you think refugees and asylum seekers are included on this list?
I think that refugees and asylum seekers have experienced a whole range of things that will have an impact on their mental health. So thinking about refugees and asylum seekers in this country, clearly the people have come to this country to escape trauma on a scale that most of us can only imagine. So, you know, everybody experiences bad things from time to time, but to experience something so bad that you leave the country you were born and brought up in and cross the world and come to a completely different country, I can only imagine how traumatic that experience must have been to make this feel like the safe option. And so people are exposed to trauma, which we know has an impact on their mental health. And then the things that we know protect our mental health are often much more difficult for someone if they're a refugee or asylum seeker. So I have a good relationship. I understand. I have good neighbors. I have a comfortable home. And all these things are incredibly important for my mental health, particularly, as I said earlier, I've experienced bad mental health. I've experienced mental illness. And I would not be able to do the job I do now if it weren't for those protective things around me. But if you arrive in a strange country, you may not speak the language, you certainly won't understand the neighborhood, you won't necessarily have friends and family around you, you probably won't. You probably be very, very worried about how they are. You won't have people you trust and can talk to. And that, without those kind of protective factors around you, it becomes incredibly difficult to even think about your mental health, let alone look after it and do positive things. And I think we are, in the UK, we are a very privileged country. We're a very lucky country. And you know, I'm a very lucky person. So what I want to do and what we want to do as a foundation is share our learning and share our understanding with people who haven't had the good fortune that we have, who find themselves in unfamiliar environments and who have done remarkable things to escape trauma and now find themselves in a country where maybe even the welcome isn't as warm and strong as it should be. And you know, we want the welcome to be as strong as it can be, and we want to do everything that we can to support the mental health of refugees and asylum seekers. And I've worked directly with some of our other groups that you mentioned. So I've done work with people with long-term health conditions, and I've done work with vulnerable families, and I've done a little bit of work with refugees and asylum seekers through some of our projects, particularly in Scotland. And what's clear to me is that although life experiences are incredibly different, the things that helped me through what I experienced have helped a lot of other people. And our job is really to share that learning, to share that understanding, and to try and do anything we can to improve the mental health of groups who really just deserve a chance to put their lives together and deserve a chance to rebuild their health, their community, and their mental health. And this is the one small thing that we can do to support that.
I'll say thank you again, David, on this one. I'm just going to add up something we just talked about. As a lived experience myself, when it comes to refugees and asylum seekers, I know how hard life can be, especially when you're dealing with the Home Office. You have no idea what's going on. And secondly, you're not really accepted by communities. And you've already been labeled by the government that you are worthless. And, you know, it can really, I think it causes a lot of mental health problems in these groups. What I mean, the groups, I mean like refugees and asylum seekers. It's hard if you're in a new country where you don't know anyone and trying to change the culture as well and as well treated badly. So yeah, that's what I wanted to say. As a lived experience, I know can be really, really bad. But I'm glad that we've got places and projects like Mental Health Foundation, which in they're really helpful, they're helping people. So that's another positive for asylum seekers and refugees to be part of that. So yeah, I'm going to move on to the next question. It also talks about something that resonated with my everyday life. So here we go for you, David. What about the impact of racism? How do you see this impacting people's mental well-being?
This is really interesting, and it troubles me a lot that people who've already experienced trauma and have come to the UK as a place of safety, that it doesn't always feel as safe as it could be. And a lot of that is because of racism. And sometimes it's unintended. Sometimes, unfortunately, it is just deliberate. And I think it's based on ignorance. And I think I was first struck by how significant racism is when I was in my teenage years. So I grew up in a very privileged, very white area in the southeast of England, and I think I could probably count on the fingers of one hand how many people I knew who weren't kind of white middle class English people. When I was a patient in a psychiatric hospital, I was the only person with a white skin. And that suddenly to realize that the rest of the world wasn't just like me was a real shock to me. And it really opened my eyes. And the stories I heard from fellow patients about their experiences of racism genuinely shocked me, because I didn't know anyone who I would call racist. And everyone I knew was just, we're just nice people. But I just don't think we understood what the experience of racism was like, because, when we go places, when you go around and you speak good English, you have a nice accent, you have a white skin. I wear a suit when I go to work. Yes. People just treat you well. And I expect to be treated well. And I get slightly annoyed when I'm not. But, that's my expectations. When you are made to realize that that's not how everybody finds the world, you have to stop and think. And for a lot of us, we just genuinely don't understand what racism is until we have conversations about it, until we see people who are exposed to it. And then if you are the kind of person that, can understand and imagine what that might be like, then all of a sudden you start to see, well, how on earth can racism not affect your mental health? Because it chips away at all the things that you take for granted. You want to be listened to. You want to be respected. You want to be able to have choices and make decisions on your own behalf. And I take all that for granted. And I know, that's just what happens. And if that was taken away from me, honestly, my mental health would be gone in a minute. It would just be everything I know and trust and believe would just be pulled away like a carpet from underneath me. And I think that's what racism does. It It attacks people's identity and sense of self. And that is incredibly disruptive for your mental health. So there are so many ways in which racism are wrong, and you know far more about that than I will. But that attack on your identity and yourself and your ability to be the person you should be is so fundamental to your mental health that is, you know, that feels to me like that's at the foot of it. And then, of course, who do you ask for help? Who do you trust? Who can you turn to? And, you know, if you're part of the existing culture, you know exactly what to do. You don't even have to think. You just do it. You have a conversation, you know, with friends, with colleagues, even just neighbors. And you know that you can have a good, respectful conversation. And that just wouldn't be the same if I look like you. You know, I know people would just instantly respond differently. And it's not even necessarily conscious. It's because we have a sense of identity and we recognize people who fit that model. And if you've been brought up in a predominantly white environment, that's your model. And if you're an outsider, then you really feel like an outsider. Now, my only experience ever of being an outsider is having my psychiatric diagnoses. And I know that when people were introduced to me by my psychiatric diagnosis, they treated me very differently. You know, I had a diagnosis of schizophrenia, and people still to this day will discriminate against someone with that diagnosis. The difference is, people don't know that instantly, unless, of course, you're actually in hospital or you're being introduced in the health service by it. Nobody knows that. My neighbors don't necessarily know that, although obviously if they're watching this podcast, they will. But, you know, that's not the first thing they think about me. But I know that when that is the first thing people think about me, I experience that discrimination. I've experienced it in workplaces. I've experienced it in hospitals. I've experienced it in, you know, even I've had a GP that has looked at my notes and seen my diagnosis and not taken my health seriously. Now, compared to the experience of discrimination that you and people you work with have received, that's kind of, it's really minor, and you can get over it and you can live through it. But it, at least it gives me a little bit of an insight into what that's like. And with a little bit of imagination, I can see why we need to work really, really hard to challenge that. And at the Mental Health Foundation, I think certainly in the last few years, we've recognized just how important that is for mental health to attack and challenge racism. And we really welcome the support of other organizations who are probably better at it than we are and have been doing it longer than we have to help us get on with that and just be better at what we do.
Oh, I'm glad we talked at least about racism as well a bit. Racism to me is like a full-time disease to me. As soon as you leave your house, you have to pay attention. It can be physical, it can be emotional, it can be body language, it can be so many ways how they do it. But if you're dealing with mental health, it triggers a lot of things. You know, we live in fear. You don't know when yourself. So it is really important to address this topic about racism as well. I always say, oh, racism is my fight. You know what I mean? But I'm not sure about that. But I think, I want to hear your opinion, David, on that.
Well, I think it's our fight, and that's, oh, yeah, that's what I've learned recently. It's, you know, in the same way that sexism and misogyny isn't just an issue for women, it's an issue for all of us to take on. Racism is not just an issue that the people of color should be taking on. It's an issue that all of us should be taking on. And I think one of the things that I've learned quite recently, and the language that is becoming more familiar to me is the language of white privilege. And white people need to understand white privilege and acknowledge it, and acknowledge that, you know, when we focus on people who've experienced discrimination, it's right that we do that, but it's only a small part of the problem. so much of the problem, certainly in the UK, is that we are and behave like a white country. And historically, of course, we have been a white country. But if we really want to tackle racism, it's something that we all need to do. And it starts with not only acknowledging racism, which I think we are better at now than we have been, but also acknowledging white privilege, which still, I don't think we as a broader society are good at. I think we still find the language difficult. We still don't really understand the concept. We don't talk about it with our children. We don't kind of start to unpick it in this way. We still think of racism as a black issue, not a white issue. And until we think of it as everybody's issue, then we still have problems. But, you know, what you say about culture in terms of mental health, that's changed so much in my lifetime. So, you know, when I was growing up, you know, people with my diagnosis would have been locked up for life. That was the culture. That was the practice. And I am very glad that, you know, I wasn't born 30 years earlier, because I certainly wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation with you, you know, 30 years ago. You know, we that culture has really shifted. We are much, much better at talking about mental health. We still haven't completely cracked it, but we have created a culture in which you can talk about mental health, you can talk about mental illness, you can actually see people who have those experienced as an ordinary full member of society, rather than somebody who needs to be shut up in a building on a hill, you know, 20 miles away from anyone else and kept out of trouble. And that cultural change has taken two or three generations, but it's happened. And I guess, you know, the culture towards the culture of dealing with racism has also changed. I mean, it's certainly hugely improved compared to where it was when I grew up. You know, when I was at university, we still had, you know, we were growing up at a time of apartheid in South Africa. And that wasn't, you know, it was still contentious. The idea of apartheid was not, you know, seen as a universally bad thing. You know, some people thought it was a right and a proper thing. So, we were still having that genuine live debate when I was a student about whether apartheid was a good or bad thing. Now, the world has moved on a long, long way since then. So, you know, we can make progress, but we still have a long way to go. This is slightly off topic, isn't it?
I'm laughing as well, David. Oh, this is good. I think this is part of the topic as well, because what I learned doing the podcast, like, we can have a topic and open up another talks, which is the actual part of the same reason why we're here today, is to actually explore how to look after each other's and the things happened before and now then. So I think you're on the right track on this one, David. It's great. For me, I don't know. It's like, I think, like, I'm going to add up, like, for me, the thing I find it very difficult when I came to this country about mental health is the culture differences. Back home, we have to deal with the stigma. Dealing with the mental health, it cannot be understood, maybe, or respected. They look at it badly. But again, as we said, the world has changed a lot. I think people understand more than before in many countries around the world. So there's so much been done, especially the project like this, the one I work with, Mental Health Foundation and others come together. So they do make a big difference by raising awareness as well and educating people. So now, I think we are coming to the end of this episode. Very simple question. What advice would you offer everyone to look after their mental health?
There are some really good basic things that we should all do. But I think the first thing to say is that the key to good mental health is looking after our own and each other's, and recognizing that we are not, none of us are just isolated individuals. And it, and the only way you can really have good, positive mental health is to be part of a community. Now, that will mean different things for different people. And you can be a member of lots of different communities. You don't have to just be a member of one community, but having those relationships, having good constructive relationships with people around you, with people that you have something in common with, is really important for your mental health. And you've talked about how important it is for you, and how important, and I would say how important podcasts like this are to encourage people to have conversations about their mental health. That means you've got to have someone you can talk to about it, someone you trust, someone who's also interested in that. And that's really important. So good relationships are really, really important. And particularly for refugee communities where you're not in the country of your birth, where you're not necessarily in an environment or community that you're familiar with, it becomes even more important to have good, positive relationships with people. Secondly, honestly, if there were a magic wand for mental health, it's good sleep. Again, I take that for granted. When I go to bed, I just sleep. That's it. No problem. No issues. That's it. But you know, if you're not in an environment where you can just safely go to sleep, that's always going to cause problems for your mental health. So I would say to anyone, you know, look after your sleep, look after each other's sleep. Whatever circumstances you find yourself in, it is almost impossible to have good mental health without good sleep. And then, so we've got relationships, we've got sleep, and then there's kind of what you eat and how you live your day-to-day life, and you need to move, and you need to eat well, and you need, and again, all of these things are things that it's easy to take for granted, and those are the kind of, you know, the skills and experiences that we do need to share. And when I see images, and we're seeing them now in Sudan, we're seeing them now in, you know, we've been seeing them in Afghanistan, we've been seeing them in Syria, we've been seeing them, you know, in Ukraine. And you know, I've been around long enough to have seen them in pretty much every part of the world. You know, when you see the circumstances that people are living in as part of that refugee and asylum seeker experience, then even just the basics like eating, sleeping, and, you know, keeping moving and having good relationships, that's a full-time job to try and make that happen. And I do think we as a host country could make a better job of contributing to that. And you know, that's something we should all do when we think about our own behavior, we think about talking to our political leaders and so on, that we need to be working harder to say, look, you know, mental health is everybody's business. It's the world's business. And we need to make the things that we take for granted, the sleep, the food, the shelter, the work, we need to make those accessible, appropriate, and meaningful to people who haven't been given the same opportunities to just live that life that we have.
Oh, thank you so much, David, again, for coming to the podcast. I really enjoy talking to you, and it's really powerful as well. I'm just going to remember what you said about looking after a good mental health. You sleep well, eat well, walk, exercise, I mean, and have a good conversation. You mentioned this many times, good conversation. So I'm also enjoyed talking to you. So thank you so much again. And if you've got anything to add up while we're wrapping up this, please do so.
Example of why, you know, we need to pull our communities together, because you and I have a lot of things in common and a lot of things that aren't in common. And we only find that out by having conversations. There's nothing I like more than having a good conversation about these kind of areas. I just love the fact that the technology today allows us to have these conversations and share them with a broader audience. And I hope that this does, the conversations that you and I are having, do promote conversations in places that wouldn't necessarily find them easy to have. And if we can just if the work that you do and the podcast encourages just a handful of conversations, let alone dozens, let alone hundreds of conversations, then that's a really important step to improving mental health. And the other thing that's worth knowing is everything that you do that helps somebody else is improving your own mental health. And that's one of the nice things about working in mental health, that everything that we do to make something better for other people is improving our mental health as well. So it's not like I'm giving you something and losing it. It's like I'm giving you something and gaining. Yeah. And there aren't many things that you can do in life where, you know, you go into a conversation and both people are better off and nobody's worse off. So it's a great thing that you're doing. And I really appreciate all the work that you're putting in, despite all the things that you, all the challenges that you must have, that you've turned it around and you're doing this, you know, this creative effect.
Okay, what a great talk there, David. Thank you so much again. And thank you for those people who are listening to this podcast here. It's amazing to have you, David, here again. So now I'm just going to give you information about how to go around to get more information about Mental Health Foundation podcast. You can go to www.mentalhealth.org.uk. For Siakulma We Talk podcast, you can go to Facebook, Anchor, Instagram, and Apple, Google. You can go to www.wetalkpodcast.co.uk and share it with your friends. And this podcast was actually created for our voices to be heard and raise awareness. And that's the purpose as well for this episode. Please share it with your networks. Thank you.